This is part two of Mae Brussels' broadcast. This is Mae. For those of you that might have turned in the middle or got lost and didn't catch the beginning, this is broadcast number 701, May the 13th, 1985, and the program is called World Watchers. Now, the importance of John Singh Laub and Daniel Graham and the Fritz Kramer that I keep bringing up and out has nothing to do, it has a lot to do with the Battle of the Bulge in the past. It has nothing to do with burying the past at all. Jack Anderson had an article a year ago. This was February the 9th, 1984. I might have had it on the air then, and it's applicable to the burning of Bill Graham's buildings and to John Singh Laub as an advisor in the Pentagon today. He's the current president of the World Anti-Communist League, working with Reverend Moon and Bill Graham and the police department in Los Angeles, the Western Goals. And as I understand, they just opened their offices in London this week. Western Goals and John Singh Laub is on the board of that. They have a member of the Luftwaffe on that board and direct contact to the BND, the Galen Group in Germany. Jack Anderson wrote, "The jackboot and swastika lurk behind the continuing slaughter of tens of thousands of Latin Americans by right-wing death squads. Hitler's 1,000-year Reich, the concept of it, the anti-Semitism, the racial purity survived among right-wing elements in Latin America and also in the United States with Soldier of Fortune, Eagle, and the magazine set up, the survivalist magazines were set up by these Nazis and the Klan and the World Anti-Communist League. The taking of America will become from these actual domestic-grown mercenaries when they run out of jobs overseas will begin to sweep up. And they're already, they've declared war May the 1st in the United States, and the burning of Bill Graham's material in offices is an indication that within just a few days of the war that they said would take place. Jack Anderson sent his aide to Argentina, Paraguay, and Chile to look into the Latin American death squads and found that they are part of the Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, which is part and started from the World Anti-Communist League. They ran into men in a group called CAL, C-A-L, out of Guadalajara, Mexico. Remember, I read this to you a while back. They had set up their death squads. They have marching orders. They belong to a secret society run by powerful anti-Semitic businessmen and lawyers. And speaking of secret societies, in a few weeks I'm going into George Bush as a skull and crossbones from Yale, digging up a grave to be initiated into that society and public officials who are part of those secret societies and can become vice president and even president of the United States. Jack Anderson said sources of the World Anti-Communist League say that the group in Guadalajara uses their anti-Semitic credentials to solicit money from wealthy Arabs, and one World Anti-Communist letter said that the Middle East had pledged $50,000 to the League in 1978 at their conference. Tom Davis was asking me the role of the Arabs and Saudi Arabia into this spy network. They're tied in and very much part of the World Anti-Communist League. They send money to the PLO. One former official of the World Anti-Communist League, a notorious proponent of Nazi superior race theories. And we're talking about the branch in the United States with their conventions here in the United States, in New York or in San Diego. Their world conventions include the United States and people from our country, such as Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms and Phyllis Schlafly and her husband. But going on to this one particular article, it said they are anti-Semitic, they're racist, they're Nazi, they're pro-Nazi, neo-Nazi. They work under the label of fighting for nationalism and nationalists. But one gentleman was bragging about the fact that he personally hid Dr. Joseph Mengele on his exodus to Paraguay. And ever since World War II, the right-wing military in Latin America have idealized the Nazi war machine. The Germans of Adolf Hitler's era are depicted as supermen in Latin American magazines, just as they are in our magazines that sell the uniforms and weapons of the Waffen and SS. And their Mengele was honored in Paraguay with citizenship, and also he's an advisor along with Klaus Barbie down in South America, where they advise the death squads. Now, that kind of activity with American agents is coming into and has been part of American death squads for a long time. But when they start burning buildings and wearing uniforms and taking credit, they want brownie points for all of their work. Last April, April the 1st, I did a broadcast on Soldier of Fortune and their ads for Waffen SS uniforms. This is a time when the President of the United States is going to the graveyard of the staging area of the Waffen-SS, where 47 of them were buried. And it's about Major John Singlaub and his work with the Nazis and the Waffen-SS. And Singlaub's name, again, was in the Washington Post, a big story and a full page in the Washington Times' Reverend Moon's paper. So the San Francisco fire had an origin, and it was as obvious to me, or if anybody would have studied this, what is going to come is going to be much worse than what happened. And what happened is just a warm-up based upon the track record of the people involved. Now, I stuck my neck out and did something for Bill Graham, and only for him, because I'm sympathetic to what he did and what his music, bringing those people out, did to my personal life and how it affected us personally and the people around our culture and society. And I wanted him to come here. Of course, he had just come back from Europe, or wanted the fire department and alcohol, tobacco, and firearm. We're working on the case. And I gave them information about stormtroopers in San Francisco, about the National Socialist Party in San Francisco, activity they'd been involved in before, and the Adolf Hitler Awards and Leadership Medals, the people associated with the goals of Adolf Hitler, whose primary goal, as they said, is to be able to serve the cause of Adolf Hitler in a position of trust and leadership. And this is part of a piece of material written up by a person whose lifelong goal and ambition is to serve Adolf Hitler with unlimited talents to do just that, and also very heavy into the San Francisco area, the San Francisco police. It's the police of Dan White, the Zodiac killings, the SLA, the place where the police are literally members of the Gestapo and have had that network for a long, long time. Back in 1979, on tape number, broadcast number 414, and we're up to 701, I was talking about the Zebra killings in San Francisco and the use of the COINTEL program set up by the FBI. The COINTEL program at that time was under the direction in the 70s when all this violence was coming down under Tom Charles Houston. Tom Charles Houston trained in the Pacific with Charles Willoughby, Mr. Kurt Weidenbach, and with agents associated with Lev Dobrianski, Reagan's ambassador to the Bahamas. I just briefly touched on him and will update that as soon as possible, and his Ukrainian quarterly magazine and his links to Nazis overseas and in the South Pacific, and Tom Charles Houston of the COINTEL program, I just learned in the last few years, was very much a part of the Nazi network in Asia before he came to Washington to head for Richard Nixon, that famous COINTEL program. And Nixon was president during the Zebra killings here, where 14 people were murdered and 7 wounded. And the people in charge of the California violence, as I referred to, San Quentin Six, the Soledad brothers, and the shootouts, the Marin shootout, and Hugo Pinnell and Rochelle McGee, that was all part of the assaults of the Aryan Brotherhood under Keith Gilbert, who was in there at the time for wanting to kill Martin Luther King and being closely with the people who did kill Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, and Robert Kennedy. In 1980, about three-quarters of a year later, November 80, that was the week of the election when Ronald Reagan was elected president, that he would soon be inaugurated, I had a section of that broadcast titled, "Rock Musicians Will Have a Hard Time with Reagan Administration," and I referred to efforts to ban rock concerts and also the death of rock star Paul Kantner, 39 years old, who had a stroke, who at the time, I believe, was murdered. And I mentioned that he was founder of the Jefferson Starship in San Francisco. We'll talk about symbolism or a full cycle when the building burnt down, one of the first people there to help clear out. And a long friend of Bill Graham in the Bay Area is Grace Slick of the Jefferson Starship. So in 1980, I was talking about the possible murder, or what I thought was the murder, of a member of their group, and then a young person who has a stroke. And then 5 years later, the building is gutted down, and what I said he would do to the musicians for the purposes I stated, to stop them being able to meet in large groups and have concerts to protest the wars that he was going to assure that we would have, came down exactly as I said it would. Now, just this last week, there were 1 million people in Spain protesting Ronald Reagan's visit. There were almost that many in Holland yelling at the Auschwitz Pope, the I.G. Farben Pope, the Nazi who helped the Secretary of the Vatican, Mr. Montini, who became Pope Paul VI, write the passports for the Nazis through the rat line, conceived by Licio Gelli, who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, who worked with Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer, Klaus Barbie, Otto Skorzeny, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Mengele, all one ball of wax. I was talking about these particular people and their relationship to fascism through all these years, but how it would hit America. And as they brought us to the brink of World War III, if there were these musicians alive, and you could rally people in 24 hours to get an anti-Bitburg concert. If Bill Graham pulled that in a few hours and had 500 people in San Francisco on just 2 hours' notice, the Chronicle came out in the morning. Imagine what we would have if he wanted a weekend Bitburg concert. He could have 2 million up at Altamont if he wanted to repeat some of the rock concerts that took place. Objecting to December the 7th, 1980, the night before John Lennon was murdered, I did a broadcast on questions about Ronald Reagan. Looking back, what would we look back to? This was 5 years ago. I'd like to run through those questions, and maybe I'll do that next week. But also on part of that broadcast, I mentioned assassination teams from the early 60s that are all in place. If they weren't part of murders, they're part of the cover-up. And one of the people that I detailed in that was John Connolly. And tying John Connolly into the San Francisco scene, the Aryan Nations, the Aryan Brotherhood, the Order, the Nazi network throughout the United States. Long while ago, I did have a broadcast on his links to the planned invasion of Dominica. And just to remind people, apropos of the streets of San Francisco now, John Connolly's name was used in undercover tapes with the top Nazis from Canada, Mr. Wolfgang Walter Droge of Toronto, and various Nazis that incidentally hailed Ronald Reagan for calling them, working now down with the Contras, as being freedom fighters. One of them was just released from prison last week, who was involved with this mess, Mr. Black. But this group are heavily funded. They talked about it and their racism and their Nazi flags and Gestapo when they were caught trying to invade Dominica and take that over. They're directly linked not only to John Connolly, who was on the board of Permandex, who is part of the World International Cartel, that British-American-Canadian corporation, to rearm Germany, to build up the German munitions cartel, the very people that Ronald Reagan is doing his remembrance and his forgiveness with. John Connolly was part of that Reinhard Gehlen, Clay Shaw group of assassination teams that kill heads of states around the world. And if they don't hold the gun, and even though he was shot, he wasn't meant to be shot through with these fine marksmen. He was hit at Dallas and survived it. He not only was a part of that in 1963 and covered up the murder while he was the governor of that state, but then was named and linked on tapes to Nazis in Klan now, and the Nazi clans here linked down to the South American Adolf Hitler network that Kissinger set up with the rat line with Jelly and Barbie and Mengele and Martin Bormann and so forth. So that from the World War II, then to the Dallas assassination, the Robert Kennedy assassination, and now into the United States network with the computers and into the police departments permeating in 50 states, that is what we're going to have to deal with in the United States. The people that listen every week know that I've updated these stories for a long time. As a matter of fact, in 1981, I mentioned on broadcast number 522, music blame for drug abuse. And this was a big harangue against people and rock music. And this was right after, about a year after the murder of John Lennon in 1981. And Nancy Reagan was blaming the rock music for putting people into drugs and still beating that dead body of John Lennon, as if the drug problems in the United States didn't come from the Vatican, from Banco Ambrosiano, from Milan, from the Milan Mafia, Pope Paul VI, the one doing the passports for the Nazis, heavily linked to the drugs, and John Connolly, again, in the books on the Vatican, linked directly to the Vatican and the narcotic traffickers. Their names come all the way from World War II up through the assassinations, into the drug traffic, into the Nazi network, and also with their goals to hang people from Jews and blacks from the polls from one end of this country to the other and follow the Bible of William Pierce, the Turner Diary. Now, last week, the president just returned from Europe, and the Los Angeles Herald Examiner had a story that didn't go over the wire services, a picture of Ronald Reagan in a tuxedo with Richard von Weizsäcker, and large, it's a half a page article Awakened Ghosts, a Father on Hitler's Staff. And this is the way it reads. In Bonn, Germany, West Germany, last evening, President Reagan attended a festive state dinner hosted by Richard von Weizsäcker, President of the German Federal Republic. The White House and the press organizations, that's the press organizations that I was writing to, that 100 letters well, before he went over there, apparently were unaware of the fact that von Weizsäcker's father, Ernest von Weizsäcker, was one of Adolf Hitler's leading and most important diplomats, and that he was convicted as a war criminal in Nuremberg in 1939. Ambassador von Weizsäcker accepted the SS rank in 1939. That's nice and early. He was promoted to Brigadier General in Adolf Hitler's Waffen-SS in 1942. This article leaves out the Vatican connections, which is even more insidious. General Weizsäcker was in the height of the Hitler period from the 1930s. He was in the most influential positions in April of 1938. 5 months before the Munich crisis, Hitler appointed him as Secretary of the Foreign Ministry. Von Weizsäcker sat as Hitler's top professional diplomat. He attended many of Hitler's most important meetings and conferences, including one in Berlin in March 1939, at which time Hitler personally bullied President Hacha, H-A-C-H, of Czechoslovakia into surrendering what remained of his country after Munich. Now, along with the surrender of Munich, working for the Waffen-SS, working with Baron Ernest von Weizsäcker, was the brother-in-law of Prince Philip, the present husband of the Queen of England. Those exposés came out at the identical time that the president was going to Germany, and the host for this event, photographed at the cemetery, along with the president, was Mr. Richard von Weizsäcker, wearing a hat, sort of looked like a mafia boss. He looks a little better in his tuxedo, I have to say. And they're out at the cemetery where I'm sure his father's friends are buried. And I always felt that as soon as he became president of Germany, it would steer our country much closer than even Helmut Kohl. It's the von Weizsäcker connections. The article says, tried at Nuremberg beginning September 1947, von Weizsäcker argued for his defense, as did all the others, that he didn't know about the camps and didn't know what was going on. But the article goes on to say the U.S. military court rejected von Weizsäcker's claim, saying, in quotes, the German Foreign Office played an important part in the horrors of the concentration camp. In fact, the Waffen-SS set them up. Von Weizsäcker had to realize what the end of this would be. At Nuremberg, von Weizsäcker's defense team included his son Richard, who's now president of Germany, who was an attorney in Nazi Germany, who went on to become the president of West Germany, thanks to Mr. Adenauer and John McCloy and Ronald Reagan and NATO and the powers that be, the lawyer for Adolf Hitler, who defended Hitler's right-hand man, becomes the president of Germany and makes sure that our president is dragged to Bitburg. And it says, convicted on several counts in April 49, von Weizsäcker was sentenced to 7 years of imprisonment. It was reduced to 5 in 1950, thanks to John J. McCloy. Now, I mentioned a few weeks ago that Mr. von Weizsäcker was in the Rose Garden, along with John McCloy, and I had to read the article twice because he played such a low key. And I understand that there were demonstrations in Washington, and there were going to be big scenes if Richard von Weizsäcker was entertained publicly at the White House, and so that our American media would pick it up. So the President of the United States not only stays at the home of the son of Hitler's god, he's Hitler's godson, where he stayed 3 years ago, but he was coming, he had to be reelected and get the Jewish vote and get all the votes before he could stay openly at this home and tell whose castle he stayed at. But this article claims, it begins by saying that the European press evidently didn't know. Now, the party was May the 5th, right after the visit to the cemetery, and they're both laughing at each other, looking at each other. They're holding something that looks almost like an Academy Award. And I sent to the White House, it was hand-delivered 24 hours overnight and certified a special delivery. And on that sheet, many of you have this letter that I sent the president. If you don't have, just send me a postcard and I'll send you a copy. I said, is it a mistake or a coincidence the president, the present president of Germany, Richard von Weizsäcker, is the son of the infamous Baron von Weizsäcker, liaison of the United States of Adolf Hitler to Pope Pius XII, or that the Baron worked with the Vatican for final plans of the United States' entry into the Battle of the Bulge. He was very much part of that final stage of getting into the battle. Now, I sent that to the White House, whether they read it or not, or the security. Of course, they don't give a damn, and they hope you won't catch on. But the point is that this was in their hands at least a week and a half before they had their banquet and their parties over the Waffen-SS graves, and the President of the United States gets mingled and tangled into a thing further than he's gone before, and he's been a long way with these people all along. So they tried to cover that up. And then under that article, interestingly enough, and surfaced this past week, big black letters again, and the secret mission to prove to Fuhrer's death. Now, that's something I've questioned also. Once I smoke out Fritz Kramer, my last goal is to prove that Adolf Hitler got away, and I work on that simultaneously. But they had to bring this out under von Weizsäcker. It says, London, newly released documents paint a vivid picture of Hitler's last hours. Now, this is the funny part that is new about these documents. They have them locked up for a long time, like Hitler's will, which was the blueprint for what we're doing now. The London Observer said that the new documents describe the end of Adolf Hitler's life, and the mission that Winston Churchill had to find out if Hitler was dead was called Operation Nursery. Isn't that sick? This Hitler and Eva Braun. It's Operation Nursery. Anyway, they sent British intelligence. Brigadier Dick White, who was chief of Britain's MI5, became military intelligence MI6, flew to Berlin, and this is what they found out that was new. The newspaper said the British wanted more evidence that the Fuhrer was dead. So they went on to find two key documents, a diary kept by Hitler's valet. Now I know where the diary came from. Lee Harvey Oswald and Sirhan Sirhan and Artie Brammer and David Berkowitz. Those famous telltale diaries. Well, Hitler had a diary too. It goes back to Hitler's diary. And they found a copy of Hitler's will, and it was sewn in the lining of the jacket of a Nazi official who tried to flee. The diary, they said, named everyone in the bunker and their organization. And so Hitler's diary, locked up for 40 years, is found in the pocket of a valet. I'm sure it was meant to be seen with all kinds of instructions. They haven't shown us his diary. They just said it was, we know about the will being a blueprint for what's going on today and how it was sequestered for 40 years. So much for Mr. von Weizsäcker and the Bitburg at this point, but I have a lot and I'll get back to it later. Now, for the conclusion of this hour, I want to talk about another subject that's been in the news that I've been hammering at for 2.5 years that finally made the television in somewhat of a half-assed form. NBC Evening News, 5:30 Pacific Standard Time. The authorities that be met in Munich, Germany, and decided that they have to find Joseph Mengele right now, that they have information that he is being funded by members of his family. Well, you know, for 2.5 years, I've told you the money went from his attorney to Zurich, Switzerland, and not all the money, just a particular date, and then recently another date to add to it, but particularly November 13th to 15th, 1982, and how it was deposited for him to use. So all of a sudden, Mr. Simon Wiesenthal, he's offering $1 million this last week. He wasn't interested in Mengele at all. $1 million from Wiesenthal to find Mengele. Israel wants offering $1 million to find Mengele. The same country, David Yalop writes in his book, it's on In God's Name, the link of Klaus Barbie to the state of Israel. Mengele and Barbie were very close to Israel, that I have said for a long time is a fascist nation and didn't want Mengele at all. And Germany is offering $1 million to find Mengele. And the United States government is offering money. And Arnon de Borchgrave, who works with the very people who live with Mengele and Martin Bormann, want Mengele. And why this rush? I've been detailing some of it for you, but now they have to find him. They have to silence Mengele because, one, if they get him alive, and it would be worth $5 or $6 or $10 million to get him alive, you never heard a press conference of Howard Hughes after 1957 except the one that Vance Cooper gave, the voice of Hughes, in 1972. To say that was still used, but he couldn't answer the questions and was never seen. You don't have any press conferences of Klaus Barbie, and you don't have any of Rudolf Hess. Hess couldn't see his wife for 10 years. And then he could never be close to her. We'll do more on Hess later. He had a 91st birthday last week. Oh, speaking about Adolf Hitler, I read that Gaddafi's father died last week. He was 100 years old. So given the conditions of Adolf being a vegetarian and no smoking and the finest food and care, he would be 95, and Gaddafi's father was 100. So a few desert sands and so forth, a little sand in his eye. He lived to be 100, the image of Gaddafi's father not having the advantages of Adolf Hitler. And so don't think the Fuhrer is necessarily dead because he had a birthday in April. It was 95. But again, going back to Mengele, they have to get him and silence him so you can't hear him or see him anymore. If not, he works closely with Martin Bormann, who the Wiesenthal Center says is dead, but everyone else knows is alive. Bormann is powerful. He could withdraw money from our banks. He might be doing it now. He actually is in a position to crush the American economy and run on the money, play around with the market, and they can blackmail all the heads of states of various countries. So that the financial problems of Mengele with Bormann are key. The money is drying up because of the narcotic traffic money that went from Klaus Barbie to Mengele's account. The high profit of the narcotics isn't going through those routes now that they've been identified. And also it would destroy the state of Israel if all those starry-eyed and dumb Jews actually knew the relationship of the heads of Israel and the Wiesenthal Center to the existing Nazis from World War II. So the push is on now, and everybody is salivating, let's get Mengele. Now, Wiesenthal, Simon Wiesenthal, the Nazi hunter, in quotes, said in 1981 that Joseph Mengele has a circulatory disease, that he's suffering, that he's tired of being on the run, and he's ready to give himself up or he might commit suicide. Isn't that cute that he had such details in 1981? There was several stories about the Mengele escape by the way of Red Cross, and some of you are interested in the Red Cross and AIDS. One story said Red Cross linked to Mengele alleged, and this tells how they helped him leave Germany, and he was under the control of the Red Cross. And there was another story 2 days later in the paper, Red Cross will screen blood for AIDS for virus. And I think Red Cross equals Joseph Mengele and other famous Nazis that they protected. Mengele equals medical experiments and things that could conceive of the work that was done in Fort Derrick, Maryland on the immune system and AIDS that he still could be a part of. And AIDS equals homosexuals, and the homosexuals, the Gestapo, and the Nazis smoked them out so they could kill them. These aren't any conclusions. This is a stream of consciousness. Red Cross helps with AIDS. Red Cross helps with Mengele. And then my next step is, well, Mengele helps get rid of homosexuals, and Mengele creates diseases. And I thought about that. Also, another story that I had a few years ago from 1981, that Joseph Mengele was living in Uruguay, and he was teaching torture at a hospital there. This came out of Tel Aviv, and this is from Mr. Timmerman, the well-known writer, the former editor of La Opinion from Buenos Aires, who said that he met persons who described the inmates, the Jewish inmates. The prison is called Freedom Prison. It's the main center for detention of political prisoners. And in 1981, that Joseph Mengele was doing experimentations on there and teaching the police in Uruguay how to torture. Now, Uruguay has become the center for Reverend Moon. I mentioned that before, for Causa. It is the home of the former Dan Mitrione, the subject of the movie The State of Siege. Incidentally, his son was arrested, and many of you saw it a month or two ago, working for the FBI on huge narcotic traffic charges out of Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Miami, which is consistent with this pattern of his father and Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele, and all of them working together were involved with. They also, the article on Dan Mitrione, there's one that came out recently, how his family suffered when he was killed down in Uruguay. And one of the people who read the funeral services and raised money for this young man who grew up to be a drug dealer was Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra is on the board of the Wiesenthal Center. I don't have enough time to go these interesting full cycle interconnecting links that have a pattern where they relate back to each other. But Mengele was known, and in 1981, there were quite a few details about his working at a hospital. They could have had him a long time ago. It was only after Klaus Barbie was brought in, and the links of Klaus Barbie to John DeLorean, and Joseph Mengele's role receiving the money from Klaus Barbie, that, and I believe just nudging this story along that I've worked on for so long, and then finally somebody was arrested in Germany that began to talk about the drug connections, and then the documents flowed out that this, our CIA had information all along, 1971, 1980s of the drug dealing at Joseph Mengele down in South America, and so that the United States government, the Germans, Israel, and Reverend Moon all have a piece of offering a million each. They want to get that man, and whoever brings him in, they will have him silenced. They can't afford the shenanigans that are going on now. But there isn't time to do more. I want to continue with a little more about Mengele next week. It all interconnects to Barbie and to Lucio Jelly and to John Singlaub and Lev Dobryansky and Reagan's Waffen-SS team. We'll continue here because the hour does run out, and I have to stop for this moment. I'll be back with you next week, and this is Mae Brussel. If you want sheets of bibliography that go with these broadcasts, send a self-addressed stamped envelope. I keep forgetting to remind you to do that. P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93922. Goodbye.